am able to sometimes help veterans access services in the Employment Division that might be a little shy of going in and asking for help or don't know how to ask for help in exactly the right way. My feeling about veterans' preference in employment is that it's a thank you. And that kind of thank you dates back in this country to the American Revolution, when the soldiers that left the Revolution got a mule and a quarter section of land to start their lives over. Those of us who served in Vietnam gave up parts of our lives to serve our country's needs, and while we were doing that, our peers were back here going to school and getting on with their careers. And some would argue that you never quite get over that setback. It seems to me that the 15-year delimiting date on the being considered a veteran is really unfair. In fact, I feel like it's a slap in the face. Just soon have none as have that. When I raised my hand and swore to defend the Constitution of the United States on March 7, 1967, I put my life into that promise. I was willing to give my life for this country, and I made that a lifetime promise. I still consider that a promise that I made and intend to carry that to the grave with me. So to tell me that I'm only a veteran for 15 years is somewhat of an insult, and I feel it's a greater insult to those veterans who didn't come home, who did give their lives. So excuse me, I need to get that out of the way so I can get back to being less emotional about the subject. The history of veterans' preference in Oregon, for me anyhow, goes back about 20 years when I came to Oregon. At that time, if you were a veteran, you were a veteran. If you were an honorably discharged, if you weren't a dishonorably discharged veteran, you were a veteran for the rest of your life. And you had a 5-point veterans preference if you were a veteran, and you had a 10-point veterans preference if you were a disabled veteran. Over the years, that veterans preference got whittled away through a series of administrative rules that later became law, to the point that now there virtually is no veterans preference in Oregon. This bill would restore those rights as they were 20 years ago. I find it a little curious that, maybe it's because I come from Eugene, that 20 years ago, during the height of the anti-war unrest, in this country, that veterans in Oregon had more preference in employment than they have today. There's also a couple fallacies I hear being included in the argument here. One is that because a person gets more points on a civil service test, they're therefore a better employee. That if I score 85 on a civil service test and you get 80, I'm going to be 5 points better of an employee of the state of Oregon or the federal government than somebody who gets 80. There's been no study that's correlated that. We really don't know what the civil service tests indicate, but they do sort out people, and they do discriminate people who are eligible for job interviews. It seems to me that asking 5 points preference in exchange for a minimum 2 years of service is not too much to ask, especially when you can't correlate that 5 points that you're giving a veteran means that, or that you're effectively denying people who aren't veterans, I'll put it that way, means that there's a difference in the quality of the employee. So you really can't establish that the points mean anything to begin with in terms of how the person works out as an employee. The Rich has talked about...
Excuse me, just a second. Senator Shoemaker, if that be true, what's the point of the civil service exam?
The point of the civil service exam?
Yeah.
Well, it's an attempt to make some effort to apply objective standards in selecting employees. I suppose at one time, back in the days of the spoil system, if somebody came in and they looked good, you hired them. Because of various problems with that system, the spoil system, and then affirmative action considerations, we had to try to find some objective way to look at candidates. Currently in the state of Oregon, we interview the top 5 scores on a test. And the presumption is that among those top 5 scores, you're going to find the better candidates. But there's no requirement that if you're interviewing people with a 99 and 4 people with 98s, that you have to hire the 99. The 99 is better than the 98s, or there could be an even bigger spread than that, because you interview the top 5 scores. It could be 100 people with the top 5 scores that are available in that area. It's the best we got, but it doesn't really prove anything. The only thing that really proves anything in my experience as a state employee is how somebody works out on the job. The 6 months probationary period is probably the most important in determining who's going to be a good employee and who isn't, actually how somebody works out. And that's what you get access to by getting a good score and doing well in the interview process. Okay? Rich pointed out working with veterans with chronic post-traumatic stress disorder that many of the veterans that we're seeing coming in the door now have been out of service more than 15 years. Some estimates are that the homeless population in major cities is comprised about 50% of Vietnam veterans. And we're making some inroads now into working with a lot of those veterans and getting them off the street, trying to get their lives around. It was difficult, I think, for most Vietnam vets to learn to trust the government, and not just the federal government, state government also, any form of government after their service in Vietnam. I think there was a general attitude among veterans that we came home from that war being asked by our government to go and do something, and they came home and had backs turned on us, and sort of a feeling of, I don't know if I'm going to trust you again. It's extremely difficult to go to work for the government. The reason I came to work for the state of Oregon was through a process called registration class jobs, and the last section of this bill addresses that, and that's of particular interest to me. Registration class openings comprise about 1,500 to 2,000 openings a year in this state. And registration class openings, in lay terms, are where we hire people off the street. In the employment division, oftentimes, which is where my background is, oftentimes you'll need have a mill shut down or a series of bad weather. You need to hire some people very quickly to process those unemployment claims and get those checks back out there, get them into the community and help people out. So we'd virtually hire people out of the unemployment line to fill those positions. Now, up until Governor Attia's tenure, there were executive orders which required that those openings be posted with the State Employment Division for the sole purpose of providing veterans preference. Currently, there is no requirement that those openings be posted. In other words, what we have in Oregon is a good old boy system, potentially, in those registration class openings. There's no test. There's no score. A manager, supervisor in the state of Oregon is free to hire his fishing buddy if he wants for the job. He's wanting to work with him. There's nobody looking over his shoulder. There's nobody looking to see that there's any objective process at all in selecting those candidates. And there's certainly no veterans' preference when it comes to those openings. So this measure would require veterans' preference for those openings, that we go to veterans first for those openings. And as somebody who works with veterans with readjustment problems, I'll tell you that those are probably the most likely openings that we're going to find for those candidates, because many of the veterans we work with have not been to college. Their 10 years entitlement to GI Bill educational benefits have run out. And so if they're going to come into the state system, they're most likely to come in an entry-level position. And those positions work. I was hired in a registration class opening in the Eugene office of the Employment Division in 1970. The reason I was hired in a registration class opening was because I didn't have a degree and I couldn't qualify for meet the minimum qualifications for the opening, for the test, for employment, for the employment office, even though I'd worked for 2 years in the same position in Ohio. So I was hired in a registration class opening. So I'm a person who's taken advantage of the registration class system. From that position, I went through three levels of promotion to supervisor and never once took a written civil service test. I was promoted within the ranks. By my supervisors who liked my work and promoted from within. A number of years ago, a woman named Elizabeth Leonard was the top state employee in the employment division. A very qualified person, very, very bright, talented employee. She began her career with the employment division in a registration class opening in the Eugene office and worked her way up through the ranks also. So the registration class openings are very important. They're ignored a lot. And it would please me no end if veterans' preference were restored in those openings and if we could remove the 15-year delimiting date. And basically, what I'd like you to do is return veterans' preference to where it was 20 years ago when I moved to Oregon. And thank you for your attention.
Senator Shoemaker, then Senator Gransky.
Yeah, I'm reading Section 4. It says preference shall be given to veterans when filling all non-competitive and delegated examination registration class positions. And I'm not quite sure what that phrase means. Is it, you've used the phrase registration class positions. Is that just a shorthand expression for this non-competitive and delegated examination registration class positions? Or is this intended to mean filling all non-competitive positions as well as all registration class positions as well as all delegated examination positions? I don't know what those words mean.
I didn't write the words, so I'm not sure exactly what the intent was. What my understanding of it was that these positions, which by executive order were given veterans preference until recently.
No, I just wondered what positions we're talking about. I mean, I see three possible different kinds of positions here, different kinds of appointments. And I don't, I'm inquiring what is meant by this clause. And maybe that's something that we have to ask the staff to dig out for us. You don't know what it's...
We'll get a definition.
I know what registration class openings are. There's a legal definition of that.
Is there?
I think the others are also legally defined.
It's not in the statute. At least it's not in the statute. That's
in the veterans, in the veterans statute, no.
Yeah, well, I guess it wouldn't be there. That's right.
Well, we're going to get a definition of what that term of art means.
Okay.
We so that we all know that it means what it means. So we're talking about the same thing.
We're talking about all non-competitive positions. We're talking about an awful lot of positions.
Well, they're also political. I don't know if that, like political appointments. I don't know if that responds to that either. I think your question is well placed. I just don't have the answer for you. Sorry.
Thanks.
Okay. Further questions? Senator Gretzky?
I'm trying to clarify something. We talked about this, but I want to make sure I'm getting it straight in my mind. Apparently, the way the statute reads at the present time, you're not going to be given the veteran's preference if you were in active service but weren't involved in combat after October 15 of 1976. But prior to that time, you could have been in active service but not in combat, and you'd still get veteran's preference.
That's my understanding, yes. One time.
Can you tell me why the distinction? Why did the legislature, if you know, draw the line in 76 and say, well, now your service isn't as good as what people did in 1975, even though they, you know, maybe didn't go to Vietnam? Or let's take a time when Vietnam wasn't going on and Korea had ended sometime, say 59, 60, somewhere in there, as I read this thing. Of course, the 15 years would have expired by then, and I don't know when the statute was enacted, but theoretically, it could have applied to veterans during that time that were in active service but weren't involved in combat, and they would have still been given that treatment.
Sure.
Do you know why the distinction?
I don't understand. I have the same problem that was addressed earlier in trying to define I know I got shot at and wounded, so I figure I was in combat, but I don't know how anybody else figures that out.
Well, it's the 76 part is what I'm... Maybe we can find out. I'm curious about that. Another thing, I, by luck, did not have to go to Vietnam. Just a little bit too young, and I've often wondered how different my life would be if I went. But I know one thing, I would not have liked to have gone, and I think asking for 5 points on an exam is a very small compensation for that kind of commitment. I mean, I can't imagine what that would do to your life. But I'm also wondering if it's fair to those people that went and served in a place like Vietnam to be put on the same level as those people who didn't have to make that kind of commitment. I know theoretically when you serve you can always be called, but fact of the matter is a lot of people aren't. Is it fair to all those people that had to go there to be treated the same? What do you think about that?
Well, I think there's an issue of, I see your issue of fairness. The problem I have is in trying to administer a statute is that if you try to define who's entitled and who's not outside of a time parameter, it gets very difficult. I mean, how many times do you need to get shot at? There were people who were stationed in Vietnam who never fired their weapons. There were people stationed in Balboa Naval Hospital who were taking live grenades off of injured grunts coming back from Vietnam. Who were living in the blood and the gore every day for 8, 9, 10-hour shifts and then going out in the bright sunshine. It's you can't say just because you're in the combat zone you're a combat vet. I mean, there are people who are stateside who experience combat.
Can I make a statement with
sure.
that? I went to Vietnam in 65, and one of the reasons I went, they did not have a GI Bill at that time for Vietnam veterans, and we heard that that was going to happen. So I volunteered. I was in Korea at the time, and I ended up in Vietnam. And when the GI Bill went through, they included all veterans who were in the service during that period of time, which included, you know, myself who was in Vietnam and people who were in the States during that time that did not go to Vietnam, exactly the situation you're addressing. And I remember being real angry about that personally. Over the years, that attitude has changed significantly. You know, I feel like somebody that's made a commitment, a 2 or 3 year commitment to the service, you know, that is a commitment to a cause, regardless of where they were at. They still took 2 or 3 years out of their life, and I've worked with veterans who are post-Vietnam veterans who have post-traumatic stress disorder from other incidents. So, you know, just being in the service, looking at it now, 20 years later, just being in the service, I feel, is just cause enough. You are a veteran, regardless of...
I don't disagree with that. I just, think that 5 points on an exam isn't much to give anybody. And for someone who went to Vietnam, it's nothing. I mean, I wouldn't trade that for having to give up any amount of time of my life to go there.
Nor is 10 points equal compensation for somebody who's in a wheelchair.
And we're trying to be fair since we're looking at this thing. And I guess what you're saying is there's no good way to do it other than... Thanks.
Okay. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You. Thank you.
Appreciate you taking the time to come and visit with the committee.
Thank you.
Mr. Patrick Carbone, is that correct?
Yes.
All right, why don't you come on up? And then we've got 1, 2, 3, 4.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for having me here this evening. I'm here representing myself.
Could you give your name
for the record?
Me. So we'll have that on tape.
My name is Patrick S. Carbon, and I am a counselor with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs by day, but I'm here representing myself as a private citizen and also as a member of the Vietnam Veterans of America and also the Disabled American Veterans, DAV. I am the counselor with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and I'm the senior counselor on their staff here in the central office. I've been doing this work for some 15 years in this city, and in that time I've done over 30,000 interviews. When I started out in this town, I started out also with the Employment Division, so I have some, albeit quite old, background with disabled veterans in their search for employment, as well as my own personal experience. I think we all agree, from what I'm hearing tonight, that it is, in general, a good idea to hire veterans, that veterans, as well as being white, black, yellow, red, male, and female, are good employees. They are people who have handled multi-million dollar pieces of equipment. There are people who have had the lives of the people they've been responsible for in their hands in some very tight situations. So I think we all agree that it's good to hire veterans. I think we also agree that it is good for government to encourage its citizens to participate in its government, especially those who have chosen to go so far in that participation as to wear the uniform of their country in time of war, something most people never do. So I want to address particularly those veterans who have been injured in the service, injured or wounded. When a veteran gets out of the service, he or she is looking for a job. And when I was doing employment work, and I think some of the people who've already testified here can speak to that, it was almost a catchword that give me a person in a wheelchair and I'll get them a job with IBM in 2 weeks. But you give me someone who's got a 10% residual from a gunshot wound in the back, and we're going to have a long, hard haul. By the way, I want to address something, too, about the 30% disability rating. I have filed some of the claims for the people in this room, and I've done a lot of claims work in 15 years. And I can tell you that you've got to go some to get 30% from the Veterans Administration for most disabilities, and that's a fact. Many of the people that Rich Clark and his folks see at the Vet Center are seriously disabled. That's why they're at that Vet Center, and they are getting 30% or more. But most people aren't getting 30% from the VA for a lot of different reasons, one of which I think personally is monetary. A person that's rated 30% or more disabled by the Veterans Administration gets paid extra bucks for having dependents and other things. There are other privileges that it costs money that come his or her way. And I think that is a real limiting factor on the ratings that the Veterans Administration gives out. And there are a great many veterans, male and female, out there who do not have a 30% rating and never will, but are having definite problems getting employment because of that. And as I understand it, you know, Oregon, from my days in the Employment Division, is a state that has a great many small businesses. It's a small business employer. And while it may not be nice, but particularly if the economy is limping along, that small businessman or woman may think twice about hiring that veteran who comes limping into his or her place looking for a job. Now, that may not be nice, but that's reality. And I have dealt with that myself, and I've dealt over the years with many, many people who have. So I think basically what we're asking here today is for government to take the lead in the state of Oregon to provide an extra benefit, if you will, to those people, particularly the handicapped and disabled people, who have paid their dues and done that extra bit for their country. Another thing I'd like to point out is, as I understand it, I don't think that this thing is going to cost a penny, in that you aren't creating programs. About the only cost that I see this would be changing the forms, the application forms, to provide perhaps some extra boxes for those preferences. And I don't know how much that would cost, but I bet you could pass a hat in this room right now and pick up the price tag on that for a long time. So we're asking you people to do something that allows a whole lot of people to have a chance. And we're talking about people who know what taking a chance is all about. So I think for all of those reasons, and for a lot of reasons that haven't been said and won't be said, because there are a lot of veterans who haven't come out of the woodwork yet, that this is a good bill and should be supported.
Okay, thank you very much. Question? Thank you, Mr. Carbone.
Thank you for having me.
Carbone?
Well, my mother pronounces it without the E, but she came over in a boat from Ireland, so she talks funny. Oh, thank you. And she'd be very proud to see me here today.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Rex, is it Rex Newell?
Mr. Chairman, Senators, I'm Rex Newell. I'm the Director of the U.S. Department of Labor's Veterans Employment and Training Service in Oregon. That's a federal agency that funds programs for employment services for veterans. We finance the Employment Division's veteran staff, which is about 60 people in Oregon, and also deal with their performance over the year. We work with the Job Training Partnership Act and Title IV-C programs there, and we have projects for the homeless veterans in Portland. And it's like old home week coming here this evening. I see many faces that I work with every day in the field, and I want to talk a little bit about this bill. I've had a chance to look at it in draft form and now in final form, and I think there's some points I would like to make. In Section 1 of Senate Bill 17, the definition of a veteran would include persons entitled to retirement pay from the United States based on length of military service. The present status deprives many former military men and women of veteran status who receive retirement pay from the military, yet retirees from private employers are not denied veteran status in a similar manner. The military retirement pay is an earned benefit accrued after many years of service to the nation. Status as a military retiree does not mean a person is financially secure. No one gets rich on military retirement. What other Americans deserve recognition as veterans more than those individuals who gave an entire career to the defense of the nation? Many accepted repeated dislocations, separations from their family, hardships, and danger to reach the point where they could retire to Oregon and begin a civilian career. The definition of a disabled veteran would include all persons receiving federal disability compensation as a result of military service, and adds to the definition all persons who receive the Purple Heart for wounds received in combat. Oregon law now restricts the definition of a disabled veteran to those with a rating of 30% disability or greater. The addition of persons receiving disability compensation of any degree resulting from military service will give benefits to a most deserving group of American veterans. Adding persons with a Purple Heart to the definition of a disabled veteran will be a modest reward for being wounded in battle. In Section 2, any of those persons classified as a veteran, as veterans or disabled veterans, must be qualified for the position applied for and must pass any examination required before any preference is provided. The preference points added to the score of a veteran or a disabled veteran only increase the chances that the individual receive an interview. It does not guarantee that the applicant will be hired. In Section 3, a most significant part of the bill is the elimination of arbitrary limitations now placed on veterans. No longer would veterans lose their status as veterans 15 years after discharge. That limitation is having a direct impact on virtually every Vietnam veteran in Oregon. None of us are now considered veterans for civil service purposes, virtually. The 15-year cutoff does not take into account the difficult readjustment process that many Vietnam veterans continue to face. For some of those who are only now effectively entering the labor market with competitive skills, it is too late to receive recognition as a veteran when applying for a public employment job. Once a veteran, always a veteran, according to this bill. For all veterans except disabled veterans, the completion of a civil service application presents a dilemma. If a person is eligible for one-time veteran's preference, it may be to his or her advantage to delay claiming that status when applying for an entry-level position. Rather, they would wait to use the extra points to get an interview for an advancement. The current status restricts to one-time use the claiming of veteran status. To catch up with the peers who had no break in civilian employment due to military service sometimes requires many years and many jobs. Sometimes veterans can never catch up. Offering veterans an opportunity to use veterans' preference throughout their public service career is a small yet important right veterans would claim under this bill. No serviceman or woman who entered military service after October 15, 1976 is now considered a veteran unless disabled due to military service or the person served in an armed conflict. Yet today, our country is at peace because of these young men and women who place their lives in harm's way every day. These men and women are our sons and daughters. They serve in the Marine Corps, the Navy, the Army, the Coast Guard, and the Air Force all around the world. If a conflict occurs, these are the men and women who will face the enemy. And as a side, I just say that last week ago, I had a chance to ride down the Columbia on the USS Okinawa. It was a ship that's been in the Persian Gulf. It's staffed by regular Navy people. That ship was fired on twice in the Persian Gulf by Exocet missiles, and nobody got any combat time for that. Many will serve 4 years returning home without being eligible for veterans' preference under Oregon law when applying to work for state government. This bill would correct that injustice. In Section 4, until now, veterans' preference in non-competitive and delegated examinations registration class positions was not required. This bill would establish veterans' preference procedures for those jobs that are not filled through the normal civil service process. Again, veterans' preference only applies when the veteran has comparable experience and skills to non-veteran applicants. And finally, veterans have proven to be excellent public servants. Most have high school diplomas. Many have higher education degrees. They were test selected for military service. They know how to work as part of a team. They can take and give orders. They each know what it means to leave their home and families behind, serve the nation, some in peacetime, some in wartime. They deserve our recognition and thanks. Oregon does little for its veterans. Vietnam veterans did not get a bonus when they returned to Oregon. The Veterans Home Loan Program, once a most welcome benefit for those able to buy a home, no longer is a major factor in their home buying plans. Oregon does not have a viable veteran education benefit program. This legislation makes a difference in that picture of neglect by giving those few veterans who wish to work for government an incentive to do so.
Questions? Senator Shoemaker.
Yes, I don't know whether you're the person to ask this, and if not, ask someone who does. We haven't heard much about the additional language that's to be added to 408.230 sub 1, which adds that rating shall be based on a scale of 100 points as the maximum attainable, except for the addition of the preference points allowed under this section. It's that except for the addition, which means that a veteran who does well on the exam, well enough so that with a preference he's over 100%, I take it has an absolute lock on the job because he's ahead of everybody else. Mm-hmm. Now, is that what that intends to do?
What would happen with a score of 110, say you got a perfect score on an exam as a disabled vet and you had the 10 extra points, It just gives you an interview. Period.
They're not required to hire the guy with the highest score.
They have to take, what is it, the
top five.
The top five scorers.
And then if they go through that, they can go on to the next five.
Okay, so if the top five scorers were all veterans, then I guess the group would be limited to those, would it not?
Unless they decided not to hire from among that five.
Why did they feel that that additional language was necessary?
I think some of the earlier testimony addressed that, where you would have a person with a disabled vet with a score of 95 would normally get 10 additional points. But if the top score were limited to 100, they would in effect only get 5 additional points.
Right, but they'd then be entitled to an interview because they'd certainly be among the top five.
Unless you had a whole bunch of people locked up at the top, including non-veterans, at the 100 score.
How do they then figure it out?
It's a good question. I don't know how the personnel division does that.
Well,
I believe the personnel division is here and signed up to testify.
We can learn that
from
them. Yeah. Okay, and another thing that I've been kind of troubled about, and it's existing language, but it troubles me, and I raised this once before, and I speak to it because I was in the service and I worked on courts martials, and I was involved as both an enlisted man and then as an